Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today, I'm joined by Dr. Andrew Blakey, a consultant ophthalmologist with NHS Fife and a senior lecturer with the University of St. Andrews Global Health Team. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about all the work you've done, both in the UK and abroad. Before we go into one of the more interesting aspects of our discussion about ArcLight, I was just wondering if you could just tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into working abroad, what stems that interest and what you've been up to in the last couple of years.
Hi, Sunil. Thanks very much for asking me onto the onto this podcast. It's very kind of you. Yeah, I mean, as a medical student in Edinburgh in the late 80s and early 90s, one of the attachments that I enjoyed the most was the reproductive health attachment with a doctor called Anna Glazier. And at that time, in the late 80s and early 90s, the HIV/AIDS epidemic was beginning both in Edinburgh and in Africa. She was very much into this topic and with her I planned a medical elective in Africa, did a little study looking at the attitudes of people in Zimbabwe and in Cameroon on condom use, which was very important at that time for trying to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS. And my medical elective as a student was over the Christmas and New Year, and I was able to stay with some friends in Kenya and travel to Tanzania, and I just kind of just fell in love with Africa and all the sights and smells and the chaos of it all, and kind of lying under the stars, listening to tunes, having a beer, and looking into the flames of the fire and stuff. And it was just really kind of magical time and magical experiences, and I suppose that's how it all kind of started for me.
And how did you transition from obs and gynae to ophthalmology?
Well, I mean, at that point, I was just a medical student, and it was just a thing that was interesting me at that time. But when I finished medical school, I wasn't really too sure what I wanted to do, and I did a general practice rotation actually in Leicester, and I did an ophthalmology block within my rotation in Leicester Royal Infirmary, and I met an amazing bunch of people who were all really interested in eye care overseas. And obviously the main guy at that time in Leicester was John Sanford Smith, who wrote all the books on eye diseases in hot climates, and Anthony Hall was there as well, who went on to work a lot in northern Tanzania. Nick Metcalf was there at that time as well, training before he went back out to Malawi, and so all these people were really inspirational, larger than life characters who really enthused and inspired me.
Yeah, that sounds really fortuitous and sounds like a great opportunity. So during your training, how did you optimize your training to get yourself the best experience of humanitarian work and work abroad?
I mean, because I became very good friends with Nick Metcalf in particular, who based himself in Malawi, I visited him several times, and really I just used annual leave and study leave to go out and hang with him at in Koma in Malawi, and there wasn't really any kind of very thoughtful, optimizing kind of way that I kind of tailored my training to be interested in global health. There was
no doubt I was always interested in the bigger picture stuff and maximizing impact, but I was still not clear how I personally was going to contribute beyond simply being an eye doctor and doing loads of operations. And so it was really only later, after I finished my training and became a consultant, that I really got into the teaching and this frugal diagnostic tools game, that I find myself in a professional position that really, really suits me.
The most important and potentially most interesting thing that I wanted to talk to you about was the ArcLight. So I know a bit about the ArcLight, and I know that it's a device that can be used to examine the eye. But I was wondering, could you just explain to the listeners, what exactly is the ArcLight and what can it do?
Yeah, so the ArcLight device is a multi-purpose tool which can be used to examine both eyes and ears. At one end is a direct ophthalmoscope, and at the other end is a magnifying loop with a bright white light and blue light. and you can attach to that a speculum and use the device as an otoscope as well. So the ArcLight device is a multi-purpose tool for examining the eyes and ears. One of the key features of the ArcLight is it's been entirely redesigned to be much simpler to use, very light, highly portable, robust, and completely independent of consumables. So it's got a small solar panel on the side, which charges a slim lithium battery on the inside, and the bulb is an LED light, and so that simply doesn't wear out. So there's not any problems with having to find replacement batteries and bulbs with the arc light. It's got a whole host of other little kind of minor features on it. It's got a ruler for measuring lesions. It's got a near target. It's got a red target for assessing red desaturation in optic nerve dysfunction. It's got a pupillometer on it, and it does have a small USB socket on the side. If it does go entirely flat and the sun's not willing to come out for a day or two, you can charge it up using a micro USB.
Hmm. And have you got any plans to change that micro USB to a USB-C in a future iteration?
Yeah, so the current device is USB-C, which is the fourth iteration of the ArcLight. The very first version of the ArcLight kicked off with one of those charging sockets you might have used for a toy plane, and then device 2 and 3 were the more traditional micro USB connection, and then the fourth iteration of the device has now got the most up to date USB connection.
Oh, that's very advanced and modern of you guys. For some reason, I don't know why, I just seem to have an irrational dislike of micro USB cables.
Yeah, they are a bit frustrating. Certainly the old one, where it could only go in one direction, was very frustrating, and always you're either breaking the device or you're breaking your cable. But the new USB-C is great, and it can go in either way and seems to be much more reliable.
Well, maybe in the fifth generation you can add, you know, wireless charging.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I mean, in many ways it is wirelessly charged because of the solar panel. And I have to admit, I mean, I've been using the same device now for a couple of years, and I've never once charged it. And I live in the cold, bleak north.
And what was the motivation and what was the idea behind developing the ArcLight?
There's a chap called William J. Williams, who is an optometrist based in Liverpool. He developed the ArcLight originally with a grant from the Fred Hollows Foundation, which is an Australian-based eye care charity, and really it was through John Sanford Smith, who had originally met in Leicester, and he knew I was interested in eye care overseas. He put me in touch with William, and quite early on, and I suppose then over the last 7 or 8 years, William and I have worked together quite closely in developing and evaluating and implementing the ArcLight. But William J. Williams was very much the inventor and original developer, with funds from the Fred Hollows Foundation. William's original, or at least William claims, his original motivation was just to see if he could do it or not. And again, I don't think he was being particularly strategic in thinking about the bigger picture. But ultimately, you know, it certainly filled an important hole in the dearth of equipment and training tools in low resource countries. The, you know, healthcare workers in poorer countries, they do struggle to access functional devices to diagnose eye as well as ear diseases, and the most tools are relatively expensive to buy. Most of them require replacement batteries and bulbs, and sometimes other spare parts, which when broken become almost impossible to get hold of. And even if they can, they're often very expensive. And so most devices, once something breaks in them, they get put in the bottom drawer and forgotten about. But the ArcLight's, you know, quite different in its concept and its design, in that it's, you know, it's completely independent of consumables. It has a solar panel on the surface, which charges a small lithium battery inside, and it's lit by an LED. And so the LED has a very long life. So the device isn't exposed to the frailties of other traditional devices, whereby if a bulb goes or a battery goes, it's no longer in any use. That this device just keeps on going. And of course, the second issue would be that its actual overall cost is a lot less than a traditional device. It's been the design has been simplified, and it's a much smaller, more portable device, very robust. And overall, you know, he's kind of dealing with all the obstacles and limitations of the traditional device in a low resource country.
Yeah. So the Arc Light, it's a device that can look at the red reflex, it can look at the fundus, it can provide a magnified image of the cornea with both white and blue illumination that you can use even to take photos with your smartphone with. You know, what can the Direct Ophthalmoscope do that the Arc Light can't do?
Well, I mean, as you say, the Arc Light, you know, is a direct ophthalmoscope, so it can do those typical things that a direct ophthalmoscope can do. So you can assess the fundal reflex for medial opacity, you can look at the back of the eye, look at the optic nerve, look at the retina. But in addition, you know, use the anterior segment loop end with the bright light and the blue light to have a good look at the cornea, the eyelids, the anterior chamber. And then you can attach a speculum onto that to turn it into an otoscope as well. There's a few other wee features on it that I personally find very useful. There's a ruler for measuring the size of lesions. There's a nice square red target for optic nerve dysfunction. And there's a really handy little near target, which is a bird with different colours and a little bit of detail, which is useful for engaging children with and asking them a few questions and seeing what their vision's like and getting a sense of their kind of developmental status. But of course, the big difference really between the Arc Light and a traditional direct ophthalmoscope is the fact that you know, it's solar powered, and so, you know, you don't have to replace the batteries in it, and it's got this little LED bulb which lasts you know, forever, and so you're not having to find any replacement bulbs in it, and it's nice and small, and so it'll pop in your top pocket, and you can carry it around and not feel like you've got a big clunky device in your pocket that you're concerned about dropping and on the floor and breaking.
Yeah, so the answer really is nothing. The traditional direct ophthalmoscope can't really add anything extra to what the Arc Light can do.
Yeah, I think that is true. I mean, all the studies that have been done so far with a device comparing it to a traditional device certainly can't find any functional difference between the two. If anything, you know, most users perceive the Arc Light to be easier to use. It is a simplified device. There's less bells and whistles on it to get in the way and confuse the user. And ultimately, I mean, all a direct ophthalmoscope is a hole that you look through with a light source that is aligned with that hole. And ultimately, the Arc Light is that. It's just a piece of plastic with a hole at one end with an LED placed right at the front. And depending on the setting that you use, there's not even a lens in there. So there's nothing to gather dust, get scratched, create additional reflections that you don't need. And so there's no question that you get a nice, clear view with it because of that. You know, in addition, the device is only about 8 or 9 millimeters thick from front to back, and so you can actually get a lot closer to the pupil plane, so you can keep a steadier line of sight into the back of the eye, and you know, other studies have suggested and shown that in fact you get a bit of a wider view looking into the back of the eye because of that. So overall, certainly no suggestion that it's any worse. If anything, it's actually better than a traditional, more expensive direct ophthalmoscope.
It's quite amazing. So earlier on, you mentioned that the vision behind the Arc Light and the idea behind it was to provide higher quality eye care in a more affordable way to countries where expensive medical equipment simply isn't affordable. Could you tell us a bit about how you've managed to roll this out into different countries, and how they've received it and what they've been able to do with it?
Well, I mean, it's been hard work, but a lot of fun. I mean, the Arc Light's found its way now into the hands of eye care workers in pretty much every corner of the planet. You know, there's over 27,000 devices being distributed predominantly in low-resource countries. I mean, the device in many ways does speak for itself and sells itself. It's inexpensive, yet it works really well. It's independent of consumables, such as batteries and bulbs, and it's easy to use and carry around. But of course, you know, simply placing it in the hands of a healthcare worker does not mean it's going to do any good. And that's where hands-on training using realistic simulation tools and a systematic training program are key. You know, and we've developed both face-to-face and remote teaching packages based on the WHO's core competencies for the eye health workforce, as well as the primary eye care training manual for Africa. And we've used these courses, you know, we think to, you know, more effectively implement the device into primary and mid-level healthcare workers, you know, in these settings. You know, most of our work has definitely been in East Africa, and in large part this is due to the fantastic support of COEXA, that's the College of Ophthalmology of Eastern, Central and Southern Africa, as well as the Education Division of the International Council of Ophthalmology.
In addition, we've received funding from the Fred Halls Foundation, the Global Challenges Research Fund, the Rotary Clubs of Gelsenkirchen in Germany and here in Scotland from St Andrews and Perth, as well as the Overscroft Foundation based in Leicester. You know, these funds have helped us deliver not just the device and the simulation tools, but importantly, the actual training programs as well. In addition, now that the social enterprise is up and running, we are generating funds to further support this work. This includes actually the development of a binocular indirect ophthalmoscope using the same frugal engineering approach. And much more recently, we've received a grant from the Scottish Funding Council, and this is helping us develop teaching videos, particularly for low-resource settings, as well as strengthen our web presence to promote the work.
I mean, in regards to what the healthcare workers are actually doing with it, you know, it simply comes down to being able to refine a diagnosis, work out what's actually wrong with a patient, be it a red eye or a loss of vision, and either treat themselves or make a timely referral to the right place. You know, the approach is to combine knowledge, skill, equipment to empower people to make quick, good, on-the-spot decisions. You know, it's interesting, you know, although the device is small and low cost, I mean, the users really value them. You know, we just surveyed the ophthalmic clinical officers in Rwanda who we trained, you know, over 2 years ago now. Every person still has their device. Every device is still working. And those devices are being used every day, lots of times.
Mm. And how have you found teaching people abroad how to use the ArcLight?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very, very rewarding experience. Sometimes you come across, you know, students, particularly eye care students, the optometrists and ophthalmic clinical officers that have had exposure and experience with a traditional device. So that's very interesting because they're struck by how surprisingly well the device works. Because when you look at it, you don't really imagine it is a direct ophthalmoscope, so it is very small, and when they use it, you know they're always surprised and impressed by how well they can see with it and how easy it is to use. But then the other group of students you come across, often medical students, have never actually had any exposure to a device before. So for them, it's the first time they've used anything like this. So they're not surprised or impressed by it. They simply just use it and they just pick it up and look at the back of the eye and they see an optic nerve or they see the blood vessels, they see the retina, they can observe the retinal reflection to see if there's any cataract or in somebody's eye and they just run with it and don't ask any questions and don't consider it a slightly unusual looking device. It's just what to them a direct ophthalmoscope now looks like.
Okay, that sounds great, but how would an ophthalmologist go about purchasing or acquiring an ArcLight themselves?
Yes, I mean, if people want to get hold of a device, then all they need to do is just Google, you know, University of St Andrews shop, ArcLight, and they should find the link. You know, we sell a device, you know, to users in wealthy countries. And generate a little bit of profit from that, which goes into a do-good pot, you know, to continue the distribution and training with the device overseas, as well as further development of the new iterations of the ArcLight. But clearly, if people are hoping and wanting to buy the device in higher volume for a low resource setting, then the device is essentially cost, you know, with no profit, which is, you know, in part subsidised by the sales to wealthy users in wealthy countries.
Mm, of course. So you're a busy consultant working in Fife. How much time do you spend abroad these days, and how do you manage to balance your time working on, you know, your international projects with your time spent in your local hospital?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, no doubt, to juggle it all. But I do have some wonderfully patient and understanding colleagues and a management team, I think, importantly, that see it is important to allow some flexibility in working patterns to satisfy, you know, professional ambitions beyond just the grind of the NHS. You know, so about 5 years ago, I did decide I needed to drop some NHS work. So I went part-time and I took on some university sessions, and that allowed me to dedicate a bit more time to this. And then last year, I annualised my NHS contract at 8 months, which does allow me then to have two-month blocks to work overseas. That, unfortunately, has been on hold due to COVID the last year or so. But hopefully in the future, as things settle down, that will get going again, so I can, I can push on with this work, which is, as I say, is great fun, but very satisfying.
Mm. So with COVID-19 lockdown and the inability to travel, as you say, since March, how has that impacted on your ability to communicate and engage and work with the organisations that you do abroad?
I mean, it's been an opportunity in many ways, a chance to kind of sit back and take a big deep breath and reflect on where we've got to and how we should take things forward. We've really embraced online teaching, and we've been sending a lot of arc lights and simulation eyes to institutions overseas, and then delivering online teaching, remote teaching on different platforms, Zoom and Teams. So we've been doing stuff Tanzania, in Malawi, in Indonesia, and it's been incredibly successful, actually. As long as you've got at least one person, local person, in the teaching institution who's familiar with the ArcLight device and has prepared all the simulation tools, we can take students through testing visual acuity using the ArcLight visual acuity chart that's inside the package that the ArcLight comes in. We can get them to understand how to examine the anterior segment using simple life-sized simulation images of different diseases of the front of the eye that they've got printed out in front of them, and they examine them. And I can show them on PowerPoint slides over Zoom at the same time, explaining what the different diagnoses are. The students can then go on to perform the retinal reflection test on the simulation eyes, which can mimic different forms of media opacities, be it cataract or retinoblastoma or structural abnormalities like coloboma. And then they can go on and perform direct ophthalmoscopy of the disc and get to understand the difference between a normal disc, a cup disc, a swollen disc, and then go on to different other retinal and macular diseases, age-related macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, different infections of the back of the eye. So it's been really rewarding and very, very successful. And it's been great, actually. So in many ways, COVID-19, as I say, has opened up a whole new opportunity for teaching without having to jump on a plane.
Yeah, that sounds incredibly innovative. The final question that I really want to ask you would be that, you know, if you were to imagine yourself perhaps 20 years ago, or, you know, if you put yourself in the shoes of a trainee who's just embarking on their career in ophthalmology and is interested in being involved with international work, what advice would you have for them?
I think you just need to get out there, go traveling, go see things, meet people, make relationships, get a sense of what it takes to get involved with this kind of thing, get skilled up, both clinically, but also from a kind of educational perspective, and slowly, you know, and organically grow a career that suits you. In many ways, I came to this quite late. Although I've always been interested from a medical student and always dabbled, it's really only now that my children have kind of grown up and left home and gone off to do their own thing that I've been able to invest more time and energy and effort into this area, which has been very, very, very rewarding. But before that, it was a much harder balance and much more difficult to juggle everything. So as I say, I think just get out there, see what's going on, meet people, chat, and they slowly, organically grow your career. There's no recipe, there's no method, there's no easy way to do it, there's no right way to do it, there's many different ways to do it.
Great. Well, Andrew, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been really interesting.
Well, thank you, Sunil, for asking me on. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks very much.
As always, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to get involved, talk about your work, or have any feedback, send us a message at communications@rcops.ac.uk.